Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Acharei Mot Kiddushim. You can listen to the podcast in a number of different ways, including using iTunes or directly from one of our websites. If you want to listen to it online or download from a website, I suggest podcasts.pardesusa.org. The benefit of that site is we have a complete index of all the podcasts. We've got over 400 now. And so if you want to listen to different episodes about the same Parsha, it's very easy to do that. Or if you want to look at the list of podcasts by one of your favorite commentators, we have listings in that way too. So again, that's podcasts.pardesusa.org. This week, Acharei Mot Kiddushim, Rabbi David Levenkreus discusses Shatnez. Rabbi David Levenkreus is a member of the Pardes faculty, and he also serves as the Pardes Director of Special Events. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreus.
Thank you, Larry, and Shabbat Shalom to us all. In the parish of Kiddushim, there is a long list of different mitzvot, and perhaps one of the strangest of these mitzvot, one of the most unusual, is the laws of Shatnez. It says in Vayikra 19:19, Ubeged kilaim shatnez lo yaleh alecha, and a cloth that is made of shatnez, a mixture, should not go upon you. Shatnez is a word of non-Hebraic origin. Even just listening to it, if you have a little bit of understanding of Hebrew, it doesn't sound like Hebrew. It sounds like some foreign language. Perhaps it's an Egyptian word in the Coptic language, which is distant from Hebrew, but nevertheless is a relative, is a relation to Hebrew. The phrase shashtnuz, which I'm sure I'm pronouncing incorrectly, which sounds a bit like shatnez, means false weave. And we see already in Dvarim 22:1, the second source that you people have, Lo tilbash shatnez tzemer ufishtin yachdav. Already there, it was foreign to the people, and it had to be explained what shatnez was. So already, in addition to it being mysterious to us, even linguistically, it is a very, very mysterious notion. What I want to do today is look at all the different reasons that I possibly could find or come up with as to what shatnez is, and then come at the end with a very modest proposal to as to what is going on over here, realizing, of course, that that this is a complicated mitzvah and very, very hard to come up with some overarching idea, but nevertheless, something that I hope people will find satisfying and will illuminate this chok to us. So let's go on and look at a ream of reasons that people and sages have come up over the generations. In Vayikra 19:19, the same pasuk, it says, Et chukotai tishmeru, you shall keep my chukim. Chukim are classically those rules that are not understandable, that human beings would not have come up with on their own. And so it presents an opportunity to do God's will. We do it because God said so. Their entire section, kashrut, many, many other mitzvot, that one just does according to classic understanding, because God tells us, ours is not to reason why, ours is but to do or die, something that we simply do. And this is emphasized a little bit, or an idea of what this chok might mean, is given in four, in the fourth source, in Bereshit 3:21, Vayas Adonai Elohim la'adam u'le'ishto kotnot or ve'yalbisham, and the Lord made garments of skins for Adam and his wife and clothed them. Clothing is what distinguishes us from animals. We are to be holy in dress. And as with kashrut, what shatnez does is self-restraint. Yes, you, as with the kosher, you can eat animals, but not every animal. You can eat animals, but not milk and meat together. So too here, you can wear clothing, you can make use of the world around, but there is a limit to what you can do. And this feels very, very much like what Samson Raphael Hirsch claims is a chok. Not something ununderstandable, but something that trains us, something that teaches us self-restraint, something that teaches us that the whole world is not our oyster and that there are some things that you can't do. So we have the idea that it's a chok. We do it something because God said so. We have the idea that it's to bring holiness into our dress. And we also have a very, very interesting idea when shatness is connected to the story of Cain and Hevel, Cain and Abel, and we will indeed come back to this in the end. The fifth source that you have, Breshit 4, 3 to 5. Ve'yehi miketz yamim, it came to the end at a certain time. Ve'yaveh Cain mipriya adama mincha ladonai. Cain brings an offering to God from the soil. Ve'hevel hevi gamhu mibchorot sono. Hevel too brought the best of his sheep. Umechel behem, and from his flock. Vayisa Adonai et Hevel ve'el minchato, and God accepts Abel and his offering. Vayichar lekain mo'od v'yiflu panav, but to Cain an offering he pays no heed, and Cain obviously is very, very unhappy about this. And we know that as a result of this dispute, the first murder took place. Linen was the sacrifice of Cain. Sheep was the sacrifice of Abel. The one of Abel was accepted, while Cain was rejected. The first murder is on a dispute based on a sacrifice of linen versus that of sheep or wool. And the Midrash Tanchuma of Breshit 9:9 tells us that in fact Abel brought flax seeds and Cain brought a woolly sheep. So in fact it is, according to the Midrash, very similar to the laws of shatness. And the Midrash says the offering of the sinner should not be mixed with the offering of the innocent. So for this Midrash, it's somehow we don't bring the two together because it's a reminder of the first murder. It's putting the offering of the innocent together with the offering of the guilty. The Zohar speaks about wool and linen being two separate domains. And again, this is an idea that we're going to continue with a lot. It reminds us of the first horrific crime of a brother killing a brother. And it's fascinating that it's right next to, if we look at the context of the parasha of our pasuk, it's right next to V'aftarecha kamocha, love your neighbor as yourself, which is telling us that we should care for each other, we should not have discord. And somehow keeping these together presents a confusion of roles. It's fascinating if you try and understand the context, what was going on in the time of the Torah, that linen is a product of a river agricultural economy, such as that of the Nile Valley. Linen requires a lot of water to grow. We know this in Israel, where we do have cotton, and it takes a tremendous amount of water, while wool is the product of a desert pastoral economy, such as the wandering Hebrew tribes. And therefore, mixing the two together would symbolically mix Egypt and the Hebrews. Interesting idea of what might be going on. And already a lot of the things that we mentioned over here, Cain and Abel, separate domains, are going to be improper mixtures. A lot of these ideas are going to be echoed in different ways in what we've done so far. So we have an irrational reason, a chok. We have a reason that says that it's to make our clothing special. We have a reason that says it's connected to Cain v'Hevel. Next, we're going to see about not altering creation and not overreaching. If you look at number 7 on your source sheets, Breshit 1, 24 to 25, Vayomer Elohim Totzeh Haaretz Nefesh Chaya Lemina, God said, let the earth bring forth every kind of living creature of its type, Beheva Veremesh Vechayato Eretz Lemina, each according to their kind, Vayehi Chen, and it was so, Vayas Elohim, and God made the animals of the land in their kind, ve'et abe malamina, and the beasts of its kind, ve'et kol remesh ha'adama lemineu, and all the different creeping things, vayar Elohim kitov, and God saw it was good. God says he's made different types of species, all according to their time, and this is good. If we force species or plants and animals that by nature are closed to each other to unite in some type of an unnatural coupling, this is forbidden. It's a mixing of things that are supposed to be distinct. The constant repetition of Lemineu is emphasizing this. And the anthropologist Mary Douglas speaks a lot about the general Jewish, or not Jewish, biblical dislike of mixing categories found in Vayikra and in other places. The laws of Shatness are not only clear next to Ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha, they're also near to laws about other forbidden combinations against grafting and crossbreeding. The Torah, according to Mary Douglas, likes to keep entities separate and compartmentalized. It doesn't like, almost like kids sometimes, who have a plate of food and don't want the different parts of the food on the plate to hit each other. And for her, this is symbolic boundary maintenance. Mixing wool and linen is mixing the animal and the vegetable world. For Douglas, the world is essentially uncontrollable for the ancient Hebrews. It is something that we can't grasp. Every day is like the day before. What the Torah comes to do is it puts order. It says this animal, but not that animal. This mixture, but not that mixture. It might look to you like every single day is the same, but one day is Shabbat and the other days are Chol. In other words, what it is an attempt from an anthropological viewpoint to give order and sense and to create meaning where no essential meaning ever exists. Josephus, the historian, says that nature does not rejoice when things are united that are not alike. In the Kabbalah, this is seen as defiance of God because God gave every species individuality. What I'm trying to do with when I make an improper mixture is to diminish the individuality. And the Sefer Chinuch, in a more mystical way or a moralistic way, call it what you will, says that when God created the world, everybody was given an angel or an authority to guide its mission and to achieve what it's supposed to achieve. When I mix species, I'm obstructing the God's plan. I'm weakening the powers that govern the earthly creations. You and I have got to know what is expected of us. And so we have a whole host of reasons which see this as being somehow tampering with God's will. We'll go to the overreaching a little later, which we add to the reasons of Cain and Abel, of holiness in dress, and of chukim. In number 8, this is emphasized by the Ramban. One who combined two different species thereby changes and defies the work of creation, as if he's thinking that the Holy One has not completely perfected the world. The world is somehow needs me to make it better and desires to help along in the creation of the world by adding it to new kinds of creatures. Of course, we do have a concept of improving the world. We do have a concept of helping God in God's work. Over bread, we say, Hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz, even though they are the one who brings bread from the land, even though we know that bread doesn't grow on trees. But by us turning the wheat into bread, we've helped God in God's purpose. But there's a difference between legitimate use of the world and overreaching and trying to obstruct creation. Of course, it's hard for you and me and perhaps for anybody to know why the Torah says sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not good. I'd be the first to admit that there's something a little bit, that there's something a little bit arbitrary in it. But nevertheless, there's this powerful idea, which the Ramban says, this powerful idea that this is an unnaturally tinkering with the divinely ordered world. And Hirsch gives a Hirschian biological type of explanation. If you read in number 9, he says, in an animal, thought and movement are entirely in the service of the vegetative style. Man is different. People are different. People are endowed with the breath of God. The vegetative is to submit to the animal and both to the human intellect. Now their function is no longer to mutually intermix and serve each other, but both to subordinate themselves to the human. For Hirsch, wool is the animal, linen is the vegetative. Animals have them both together, but in people they have to separate. And again, as we saw before in the Sefer HaChinuch, this is a reminder that we must guard our assigned purpose and place in the world, just as this species must be distinctly preserved. So we've all been in the world of keeping that which is supposed to be separate, separate. Hirsch is, of course, writing using the scientific understanding of his time. I'm not sure if any biologists are listening or doctors that they would necessarily agree with in the same way, but I think the idea is still there. So we have the world of don't mix things together that shouldn't be together. We have the world of do it because God says you to do it. We have the world of holiness and dress. We have the world of Cain and Abel. Rav Kook, in number 10, has a different idea. We have a little peep into another world, a world in which the status of animals will be very, very different from today. Let's read together in number 10. The legal iniquity in the ownership of property is registered in the prohibition of wearing a mixed garment of wool and linen. We are inhibited from the free mixing of wool, which was taken by robbery from the innocent sheep. So interesting, he thought that animals had a right to their wool and that we shouldn't really take them. With cotton, which was acquired by equitable, pleasant, and cultured labor. Just as an aside, I find it fascinating with the previous idea that cotton is Egypt and wool is Yisrael. This seems to be saying that what Egypt is better is doing what Yisrael, what the Mitzrim are doing, what the Egyptians are doing, is better than what Am Yisrael is doing. Rav Kook, of course, may not have accepted that argument. The animal will yet, back on the text, the animal will yet rise in cultural status through the control of a higher moral sense. One day, animals will be more important in our world so that its readiness for idealistic participation with us will not be strange or far away. For Rav Kook, the purpose of Shatness is to teach us to be thoughtful and sensitive to animals. Wool comes from animals. Linen comes from plants. We're allowed to use animal for our own advantage. We're allowed to use animals, but we should always remember that they're not the same as vegetables, that there's something important. Even the sheep we're taking things away from, and that somehow what this does, this is a different idea. It's saying that we don't mix cotton and linen because we're not trying to say they're the same. Never forget that your wool was taken from animals. So we leave this world and we now go on to a different world, the world of the Rambam of Maimonides, who in Moreh Nevuchim, the Guide of the Perplexed, says, and we're going to see an interesting mixture, you'll pardon the pun, but we're going to see an interesting mixture of arguments now which put an emphasis on Gentile customs and of overreaching, and when are we like the Gentiles and when we are not like the Gentiles. I wouldn't say it's complicated, but it's intricate, so please listen particularly carefully. The Rambam, rather simply in a way, in the Guide to the Perplexed, says, we have explained in our large work that it is prohibited to round the corners of the head and to mar the corners of the beard because it was the custom of idolatrous priests. For the same reason, the wearing of garments made of linen and wool is prohibited. The heathen priests adorned themselves with garments containing vegetable and animal material, while they held in their hand a seal made of a mineral. This you find written in their books. So far, so simple. For the Rambam, such mixtures were worn by Gentile priests. There is a general law against imitating Canaanite customs, and therefore we should not wear it. Very, very consistent with the Rambam feels that many of the chukim, many of the laws in the Torah are a polemic, just because the idolaters do it is sufficient reason for us not to do it. But there is a problem with this, and that is, if we read in the Mishnah in Kilayim, Ein ha-kohanim lovshim l'shimush b'beit ha-mikdash ele tzemer u'fishtin, that in the Beit HaMikdash, the priest would wear woolen linen. And Yevamot, the Gemara Yevamot says, a positive precept supersedes a negative precept. It is written, you shall not wear cloth combining woolen linen, and you shall make tassels, you shall make tzitzit. In other words, very, very often the tzitzit are also shatness. The priestly garment had wool and linen. It was permitted for use in the temple. And it's very, very interesting. According to anthropologists, this might be a survival of ancient magical taboos where mixtures were considered to be holy and mixtures were only allowed in the sanctuary. So whereas for the Rambam, we don't have shatness because it's what the Canaanite priests did. Over here, what the anthropologists are saying is it was allowed in the Holy Temple because that was a place where mixtures were allowed. And Dafka, in some way, we were copying what the temple was doing. With tzitzit, when we come to tzitzit, which are also shatness, Rabbi, the biblical scholar, Dr. Jacob Milgram, has got a beautiful idea where he says that we should encourage all Israel to aspire to holiness comparable to that of the priests. So it's, if we mush all the arguments together, which I'm not sure we can do, but let's try. You have the Rambam says we shouldn't wear it because we like Gentile priests. We have it being allowed in the temple because that is a place where mixtures are all right. And then we have it wearing in tzitzit because for a little time, we are supposed to be like the priests. Josephus speaks of a similar idea in your last source that you have. Let not any one of you wear a garment made of woolen linen, for that is appointed to be for the priests alone, that hybrids are only for the God of the priests, and regular people should not be wearing priests' clothing. This should only be in the temple. And perhaps what is going on over here is that we're saying that there's something special. Now we get into the nub of things. There's something special about mixtures. There's something mystical about mixtures. All the time when I think about it, I'm a very, very avid cook, but I'm even more an avid baker. And there's just something about cooking and baking that the mixtures are magic. It becomes, we know this sometimes even with something very, very simple. You have cheese with a tomato, and the cheese and the tomato are so much better than each of them separately. But a cake especially, you mix almost tasteless things together, or things with, flour and eggs, and you get something which is really delicious. There's something special about mixtures, whether they were used by Canaanite priests or not. But somehow, for us, they're used only in special moments in the temple and while wearing tzitzit. According to the previous arguments, they're all examples of overreaching, of doing what we shouldn't do. And indeed, in our regular lives, we shouldn't try and overcome God. But there are special moments when human beings do transcend the world of the ordinary and enter into the divine world. We were kicked out of the Garden of Eden for overreaching. We mustn't do it. When we speak about tikkun olam, perfecting the world, we're speaking about perfecting our world, not God's world. But sometimes we should overreach. Sometimes we should do more than what is required. Sometimes we should have holy chutzpah and do, as in Atzitzit and as in the temple, something special, and just to unite us, all the arguments. This is not an idea of mine, but an idea of a student at Pardes. They said something really, really beautiful, that when I wear tzitzit and when I serve in the temple, I do have the mixtures and I'm mending the rift of Cain and Abel. A priest is one who unites heaven and earth. When I wear tzitzit, I unite heaven and earth. What the separation is telling us is that in general, things should be kept separate. There are moments when I transcend reality. When I transcend reality, it's not only a moment of mysticism. It's not only about spirituality, if you will, but also about love, v'ahavta kamocha. In my moments of great spirituality, I unite heaven and earth. And if I may conclude by saying this, that a spiritual experience is never truly a Jewish spiritual experience if it's only about appreciating the world. It always needs to have the element of v'ahavta rechah kamocha, of bringing the estranged brothers, Cain and Abel, together again. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.